This is the first time in the history that Main Street has been able to front run Wall Street. And that's basically what you're saying, that we've got to get in, we've been able to buy this asset before now the ETFs are approved. So Wall Street and TradFi is coming in. For 14 or 15 years, the plat was able to get into this before Wall Street. And it's never happened in the history of finance.
Bing bong. I am back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast, where I've got Jeff and Plebnik of the Mass Adoption over in Massachusetts, also hosting the Freedom Festival, which is in about a month in right outside Boston in Massachusetts. But first, to start it off, I mean, obviously, Boston has a deep, deep rooted history in, the Boston Tea Party, part of the American Freedom Movement, American Revolution, to start it off. And Bitcoin, some people view it as the attack on the U.S. dollar, as it is currently the global reserve currency. But to me, Bitcoin might be the most American thing ever because it is freedom technology. So, Jeff, Nick, I'll start it right off the bat. How do you guys view Bitcoin? Do you view it as an attack on the dollar, or do you view it as maybe the most American and patriotic thing ever?
I don't view it as an attack on the dollar. I view it as an attack on everything that's not Bitcoin, that's manipulated and fraudulent in this world. So I'm just concerned about educating and having people adopt Bitcoin to allow them the constitutional rights we were granted in 1776, where we fought for our freedoms. And they're slowly, well, actually quickly being eroded away. And Bitcoin is, in my estimation, the only tool available ever known to mankind, ever discovered by mankind, to allow us to finally fight back against all the greed and corruption. So Bitcoin is freedom technology in my eyes.
Yeah, I second that. I mean, you kind of think that, like, maybe Bitcoin is like the fulfillment of the American dream. Like, if you take it to the extreme, it's like everything that's happened over however long it's been now has been a distraction. So this is like a reset back to like the origin point in my view. So this is as American as it gets, in my opinion.
Yeah. And it's kind of funny, you know, I mean, I see that a lot of the correlations with, you know, the Bitcoin movement now and, you know, the original like American Revolution back in like 1776, right? I mean, you guys are very close to it with the Boston Tea Party, right? What was that big? Yeah, there we go. I love it. The mass adoption hoodie and everything. I mean, what was that big, thing? It was taxation without representation, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it sounds crazy, but at the end of the day, I mean, I just had an interview with Prince Philip where they talked about mining Bitcoin and utilizing some of the natural resources that every single place around the globe has. And theoretically, you could turn that into energy and mine Bitcoin, and then you wouldn't even need to tax people. So, I mean, at the end of the day, I think, you know, it solves like so many problems that people just haven't even thought of just yet. But to me, I mean, that's kind of like my base case. But Jeff and Nick, what do you guys think is like your base case when you're trying to sell somebody on Bitcoin and try to bring them on in?
But Brendan, I agree with everything you just said. But if you look at it from a different perspective, the people that are in control of this world dating back hundreds of years, the same families and the same cabal of people, they want the exact opposite of what you just talked about. So they don't want us to have freedom technology. They like the power and the control. It's how it's been throughout history. I guess that's how I feel about your question. I'm not sure if I answered it precisely, but
I mean, they've accumulated all the theoretical freedom, and this is the distribution and decentralization of that freedom that's been centralized, basically. Like it's kind of crazy to think about, but like you said, this is not just like here in America, the land, but this is a global phenomena. So these ideas can be stopped no matter where you go. They're going to be there.
And also, Brendan, when we started mass adoption about a year and a half ago, you know, we said, well, we're in Boston. This is where it happened in 1776. This is where they threw the tea into the Charles River. At our festival last year, we had a t-shirt made only at the festival, and the graphic was throwing fiat dollars into the water instead of tea. So we talk about in 1776, all the Minutemen and the Patriots gathered in bar rooms and talked about how they're going to resist. And we kind of find ourselves over 200 years later in these same bar rooms, but similar bar rooms, talking about freedom, talking about protecting our sovereignty, and talking about Bitcoin. It's just amazing. The more things change, the more they stay the same.
Yeah, it's amazing how history seems to repeat itself, right? I mean, like, people don't really, like, I guess, look at the Bitcoin movement necessarily like that. But in my eyes, it's like 100% like that, right? I mean, you know, it's a freedom technology. It's open source, right? I mean, a distributed network. Everybody's got the same amount of power, right? As long as you run a node, you can, you know, make you can have the same amount of voice as, say, Michael Saylor, who has, you know, thousands of Bitcoin. So, I mean, overall, it's just, you know, it's deeply rooted in the American values. And I just don't know if too many people really feel that way just yet. But I think we're getting kind of close to there, right? But I want to take it a step back here for a second, right? Because we're in an election year, right? I mean, we've got a lot of things going on in the United States. It seems like the country's kind of more divided now than ever. But, you know, Bitcoin obviously unites a lot of people behind a central thing. So, you know, with Robert F. Kennedy basically putting Bitcoin on the ballot, in a sense, even though he's running independent, he's out there, he's making conversations about it. Donald Trump's even bringing up Bitcoin. How big of an impact do you think that it makes that, you know, in this election year, it is a talking point to talk about Bitcoin here in 2024? Maybe it's not necessarily 100% on the ballot, but they are talking about it. So how big of a deal do you think that is, Jeff?
I think it's tremendous progress. I mean, back when I got into Bitcoin, that was not even a possibility that presidential candidates would be talking about Bitcoin. So I'm happy we got there. But I don't want to fall into the trap of the narrative of, you know, left versus right. And, you know, I really think no matter who gets in office, it doesn't matter. It's really top versus bottom to me. And Bitcoin is the only thing that can fight that system. So it doesn't matter who gets in office. It's too ingrained in corruption for them to embrace Bitcoin. So that's the battle. We've got to change it.
I agree at the superficial level of like the face in the office. But in terms of the impact, I mean, it is kind of significant if you think of it as planting a seed, because I think, especially what I've noticed, a lot of the talking points in the community and where people within our own community kind of fall, it tends to lean one way. But, you know, Robert F. Kennedy basically kind of plants the seed on the opposite side of people who can't hear the Bitcoin message right now. So I think that'll probably be the biggest impact, is like people who are outright rejecting it because they assume it's just, you know, something that, say, the right supports or this, that'll start to break down a little bit. And it'll be, again, a decentralized message where no matter what party you are part of, like, there's something about it that you realize it helps you with.
Yeah, and in my eyes, too, it's another touch point, right? I mean, I think nobody is going to get orange-pilled the first time they hear about Bitcoin unless you're just a very, very open person. I think, even myself, like, I think I could count, like, 3 or 4 different times I heard about Bitcoin before I even went in and did my own research and kind of then start to buy. And then even after I buy it, I needed to do a lot more research first just because, you know, I wasn't fully confident in what I was doing there. So
you're in it for number go up.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. And I think a lot of people get into it for that, you know, it's especially initially that. And I think, you know, it almost gets lost in translation here, especially once you get into the Bitcoin rabbit hole, because a lot of Bitcoiners, you know, become super maxis. And, you know, that's I mean, I think it's the way to be, right? But I think majority of us probably dabbled in some shitcoinery at some point in time. And there's going to be a lot of it in this bull run here, right? I mean, even though we were talking about Robert F. Kennedy, he was at, I think it was like ETH Denver or something like that, saying after Bitcoin Miami, he bought some Bitcoin, and after ETH Denver, he's going to buy some Ethereum. So there's still some education that needs to be brought forth, especially with people in power. But let's talk about some education aspects when it comes to, I guess, maybe the more on the political side of things. You know, obviously Bitcoin doesn't care about politics, right? Like, if I wanted to send you both Bitcoin right now, I'm in Florida and you guys are in Massachusetts, I could do that in a second, right? Over the Lightning Network. Do you think, like,
that's right,
I guess that education is still super vital point to get across to a lot of these political officials, especially going into I guess, November time when we're coming along this election season? Or do you think it's just kind of a lost cause at this point for this election cycle and we got to focus on maybe 4 years down the road?
I think we're constructing a big structure here and we're like building the foundation. So, you know, I don't know if it's going to take 1 year or 10 years or 20 years, but we got to keep building, building the foundation. And mass adoption's main goal is to educate people. I mean, that's our main mission. I mean, if we talk our festival, we have it all day. We have workshops all day. Nick can go into what the specific workshops are, but it's about education. And that being said, we're not trying to make money off of this. We're truly trying to educate people. So, for example, anyone under the age of 16 gets in for free. We want people to bring their whole family, bring their kids, bring their cousins. We just offered a $25 non-coiner ticket, which is crazy. $25 if you're not a Bitcoiner, because we talked about it like, you know, if you're not a Bitcoiner, why would you spend $100 on a Bitcoin festival, a freedom festival? So we're trying to entice regular people to come and experience it, educate themselves, and feel the vibe. So we think education is the number one mission, and that's what we're doing.
Yeah, to bring it back to your question, is it a lost cause? I think it is, only because I think the goal of politics is to confuse people. And so I kind of look at what we're doing as kind of antithetical to politics as usual. Like, this is not about politics. This is about like core values. And so in terms of education, I think it's bringing it back to just meeting people where they're at versus, you know, being on the pulpit basically and kind of talking top down to people. And I think in terms of politics, that's kind of what it prioritizes. So this is trying to just go grassroots and invert the whole concept.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you guys both there. I think it's kind of like the bottom up approach is, I think, it, you know, going to be the way, and people then start to listen. I mean, if you know the story of El Salvador, right? That's kind of how it happened down there. And then, you know, maybe Javier Milei in Argentina is going to turn a corner and kind of continue down the Bitcoin path. It's going to be interesting to kind of follow everything that goes there. But, you know, we've also had traditional finance here in the United States kind of come in and get in with these ETF products. You guys are very close to the financial hub of the United States in New York, right? So I'm sure you guys get a lot of traditional finance people kind of trickle down into Boston. So I want to know, like, has it been more of a normie conversation with Bitcoin for you guys? Like, if you're wearing Bitcoin merch out there, or is it still kind of, I guess, a little bit quiet on the Western front here?
It's, for me, so quiet. So I'm actually closer to Connecticut, Hartford. And Hartford, for a long time, was basically the insurance capital of the world. So there's a whole rich history of finance here. But it was crazy. I was actually in the New Haven area, and it's like I did interviews with basically the mayor of New Haven, and right next to the city building is the Connecticut Financial Center. And I'm walking around with a Bitcoin hat, like walking into the building, and nobody is noticing me. And it's like, one day this will not be allowed. Like, this hat will not be allowed in here. But right now, nobody still notices.
That's funny. I'm in the heart of Boston, surrounded by TradFi people. Most of my friends who I love are TradFi, successful TradFi. Yeah, I'm a little bit older than you gentlemen, so successful TradFi people. And, you know, they call me the crazy one. I mean, they make fun of me. I'd say 10 to 20% of them have bought a little Bitcoin, are open to listening to it. But the other 70 or 80% or 80 or 90%, I think they've been so successful over the years. They're completely entrenched in the fiat system. And they can't admit that we are correct, because it basically wipes out everything they've done in their life, and they have to wake up and like start all over again. So they can't see what's out there, because it means it means too much to them in the negative way, so they just can't accept it. So it's a tough battle. And again, people will buy Bitcoin at the price that they deserve. So the longer they wait, the higher price they're going to pay. But eventually, you know, Gresham's Law is going to take place, and the bad money is going to chase out the good. And, you know, the U.S. dollar will be spent, and Bitcoin will be saved, and eventually there'll be a tipping point. And that's the Bitcoin standard that eventually will be on.
Are you looking for the number one place to find all the information you can about Bitcoin, whether it's price, whether it's hash rate, whether it's the latest up-to-date things outside of Bitcoin, whether it's nation-state adoption, what have you? Well, I've got the place for you. Check out BitcoinNews.com. They've even got the number one newsletter in the game when it comes to Bitcoin, because it gives you all the up-to-date information on every single thing that happened in the past week. That'll come to your inbox every single Monday morning. You could sign up using this code right down here or this link. It's also in the show notes. So come join me and thousands of other people that are getting the most up-to-date information from BitcoinNews.com and their newsletter. All right, let's get back to the show.
In my
estimation. I think we'll get there at some point in time, right? But I think, you know, like I said, traditional finance getting in is another point of validation. I always kind of think back to my mom when she heard Elon Musk was accepting Bitcoin for Teslas. To her, I was this crazy son, right? I mean, just kind of getting into it. But then she was like, oh, you know, Elon is into Bitcoin and he's pretty smart. There must be something to this. So maybe she didn't believe me, but it was a good point, right, to get to her. So I think that's what all these things kind of lead up to, is that it just is kind of another touch point and kind of going around in that way of things here. But, you know, we've kind of danced around the number go up here at the beginning, right? So when you guys, when do you guys think, I guess, that conversation will start to change? Do you think it's going to be, you know, I mean, I personally think it's always the number go up kind of thing. But if you look at the Google search terms, Bitcoin's still relatively low. Like, there's not too many people kind of talking about it, and it's reached a new all-time high. So what is it going to take? Do you think it's going to be the 100K? Do you think it's going to be, I don't know, something in the election or something else breaking? Like, what do you think is going to help drive more people towards Bitcoin?
It's hard to say, because what I'm starting to notice as I go and talk to more people across different age ranges and what they basically do for a living. And also, I've like really reflected on, there's so many different lenses now to explain Bitcoin to people. We have so many books now that we didn't have 10 years ago. Like, we had a select few resources and a select few faces really pushing the message. And that's widening. We have way more people, way more voices, way more talking points. And there's a trade-off there, though, because now there's so many people to listen to. What's like the exact angle? And when you realize that, I think there's always going to be like this distribution curve of like, some people, depending on where they're at, will need the number go up, you know, get wrecked type of situation for it to finally like click with them. And then some people will fall into it as, you know, they just generally struggle in life or whatever's going on, and they realize something's wrong. And then they hear a political message or what we're doing, what we're trying to convey, and something will click for them through that lens. So it's weird. You know, this is definitely an inflection point culturally, and we're just going to fall into a new set of challenges in terms of spreading the message, but it's going to grow either way.
I agree with everything Nick said, but I will say, you know, you get Bitcoin into six figures, and I think it'll, you know, open people's eyes, and I think you'll have many more people buying Bitcoin at that point.
Although I feel like we'll need to start using Satoshis a little bit more than Bitcoin.
I hope so.
We're gonna have to figure out how to convey that new language.
Yeah, 100%. And I was going to ask you guys just a follow up on that question, right? Because I think a big FUD that you know, the shitcoiners kind of use is that like you're basically like almost, you know, if you start stacking now, it'll be very difficult to get a full coin, especially if we get to that six figure mark, right? It almost seems unobtainable for the average person, right? Even if the DCA over time, whatever, like the average person is like, oh, you know, I could buy, you know, 1/100th of a Bitcoin or something like that, and I could buy, you know, 100 million Dogecoin or whatever it is. And that's kind of like their mindset still, right? It's kind of like that fiat thought process of things. So how do you guys, like, I mean, obviously you guys are educating, you know, a lot of people and trying to bring in no corners. So what is going to be your approach to kind of, I guess, like bring in some of those people and yeah, kind of, I guess, get away from that, like maybe that whole number bias. Are you going to start to talk about it a little bit more in Satoshis, or how are you going to approach that conversation? Are you looking for the number one place where you can connect with Bitcoiners, where you can find merchants that are accepting Bitcoin, where you can even find information about your local meetup? Well, I've got the place for you. That's the Orange Pill app. You can sign up directly below at my referral link right there, and I will give you 10,000 sats off your purchase. And you can even connect with me. Tell me how you like the episode. Heckle me a little bit. Tell me I look funny on camera. Do the whole nine, and I will see you on the Orange Pill app. All right, now back to the show.
I'll quickly, and then I'll let Nick add on, because he's got some good thoughts on this. But I think, first of all, you've got to have people identify that there's a problem with the fiat dollar. So they have to first understand the problem before they can understand the solution. So one of my tactics is start talking to people like, geez, why is your house worth triple than it was 3 years ago? You know, why are eggs triple than they were 2 years ago? And they, you know, I don't know, inflation. Well, why is inflation, you know, what causes inflation? So I go into that and they go, well, there is a solution to this. That stuff isn't normal. We've been programmed to think that that's normal, but it's not normal. And then I go into Bitcoin. So I kind of, that's my first approach, to see if they understand that there's a problem. Because if they don't think there's a problem, then they're not going to be open to a solution. You know, you go to a third world country or developing country, they get Bitcoin in 1 second because they need a solution immediately. When you're, you know, the Argentine peso is inflating 150% a year or a day or whatever it is, you go right to, well, they're going to, you know, US dollar. That's their savior. But they also go to Tether, and eventually it's going to end up in Bitcoin. So it depends. You got to see, you got to identify the problem before you're looking for the solution. That's kind of what I think.
Yeah. The real estate one is a new talking point that I'm using way more often. That is, I can see it in people's eyes when you get into like the idea of real estate, especially when you don't own it. And the idea of like, do you actually think you're going to be able to own a home 10 years from now, especially as a younger person? And then you see it in their eyes like, oh, like something is like, I'm not going to be able to get a house. So the real estate angle, I think, is one that should be pushed a lot harder. And yeah, I have, you know, recently also tried to convey fiat is, you know, the melting ice cube metaphor. So I don't know if you ever talk about it in those terms, but.
Yeah, let's hear it. Describe.
Yeah, that guy Michael Saylor mentioned that, Nick, right?
Why don't we hear from Nick's mouth here? While we can, just in case those who listening haven't heard it, let's hear what it is, Nick.
Yeah. Well, this will be my sleep deprived attempt. But I think the melting ice cube metaphor turns like the abstraction of money into this, you know, physical thing you can think about. And, you know, what does money get you? It gets you material items. And then as you just think about, well, if my dollar's being devalued, look around the world, like what can you actually grab? You realize it's shrinking. You know, the house you can afford is getting smaller and smaller and smaller till you can't afford it. And now you rent a small little, you know, one bedroom apartment. I know a lot of friends who are stuck in that situation. And I also know that they're hard workers that work basically 80 hours a week, you know, and yet that's the best they can do. And that's normalized in their minds, you know, right. Thinking in fiat terms, that they're not on a Bitcoin standard mentally. They're not in essence running that, you know, operating system in their minds. To them, that's just normal. And I can see it in them. There's a subconscious nihilism to it. But
yeah,
it's like you can see the walls kind of closing in on what they think they can actually get access to in the world. So everything's shrinking. you know? So that's like the idea of thinking about a melting ice cube. The solid object is just getting smaller and smaller until it's not there anymore. So I think that message should definitely be pushed harder. But man, the real estate angle, I think, is right now untapped, and we should definitely push that harder.
Brandon, there's a great meme out there. I don't know if you've seen it, where it has three, it's like 2020, you know, 3 years, and it shows the price of a house and it continually escalates. And then it shows the price of a house in Bitcoin for those 3 years. And those are completely declining. And I send that to my friends. I'm like, this is it, guys. That's the price of houses. You know, that's the price of houses. But if you were on a Bitcoin standard, it's less Bitcoin every single year. And that's the magic of Bitcoin. And that kind of, I think, gets into their head. Once they see, like, oh my gosh, I say, if you denote prices in US dollars, they're going up. But if you denote prices in gold, need I say that, but in Bitcoin, they're going down. So you either get with the program or have fun staying poor. I hate to say that, but.
There we go. But I mean, no, I think it's 100% true, right? I mean, I think that's a great angle to start to use the real estate aspect. Like, I'm sitting in a house here. It's 100 years old, right? I mean, I saw a table come out not too long ago. So I'm in Tampa, Florida. It's been a huge hot real estate market. In the past 5 years, real estate has, the average home price has gone up 90% in 5 years in Tampa. I mean, there's a ton of people flocking here, sure. But 90%, I mean, I've done work to this house for sure, but I know a lot of people that have not. And this house is 100 years old. I mean, it's not like it's like this new, brand new thing, and it's nearly doubled in value since I purchased it, you know, just shortly after COVID. So, I mean, it's something that's, you know, it's definitely like near and dear to my heart. And to you guys too, like in Boston, I have like one of my childhood friends, him and his wife. He works as a big data analyst, and she's a lawyer, and they got a 2-bedroom, 2-bath condo, and it started at $1 million for where they were looking. Like, that's just insanity to me. It's like, all right, they got like maybe, I don't know, like 12 to 1500 square feet or something like that. Maybe that's even too big for what it's going for. But it's just the real estate markets and all these places are just absolutely bananas. And it's, you know, the U.S., actually is probably one of the better places to purchase real estate, because we have a lot of you know, tax benefits, and we have a lot of like products that allow you to put little money down, but still like 3.5% of, you know, 500,000 is you know, it's, you have a tough time kind of saving for that, right? I mean, because what are you going to do, ride the volatility of stocks, or put it in like a savings account where you get 0.05% yield on the entire year? Like, no, save in Bitcoin. Nobody's ever lost money in fiat terms in Bitcoin in 5 years, right? As long as they've held it for 5 years. Like, that's what Michael Saylor always preaches. So, I mean, all right, we'll give you a quick commercial break here to bring you the Bitcoin Advisor. That's right. The Bitcoin Advisor can help you make large purchases of Bitcoin, collaborative custody model to help you get your Bitcoin off an exchange and securely store it. So none of these things, you see Coinbase going down, you see all these places potentially running out of Bitcoin. We got to hurry up and get that shit off an exchange. So go visit me at content.thebitcoinadvisor.com/greencandle. And you can set a meeting with me. That's right. Me, Brandon from Green Candle. And I can help you out and get everything set up. And if you decide to set up with us, if you come through me, I'll give you that first month free. So go ahead, set up that meeting, and we can help you out. All right, now back to the show. To that aspect of thing, I think, you know, it's essentially a no-brainer, but people still look at it as this funny internet. We live in this. Go ahead, Nick.
Yeah, well, I'd just like to keep it on the real estate point and to relate it to Bitcoin. You know, these two assets, but I think culturally too, this whole like real estate as an investment has been so ingrained over the past few decades that I know countless people that, you know, make a living doing real estate, right? So we don't look at real estate baseline as like the place I live, you know, my shelter. We look at it as more and more an investment. But when you do that, centralizing forces come in. So bigger and bigger conglomerates basically acquiring more and more of that property. takes that property off of the market, and then what do they want to do? They want to rent it out. So therefore, that's just a cycle that's going to continue unless you have something like Bitcoin, because those people who are controlling all of that land, all of those buildings, all of those houses, the only way we're going to get them out is if we can pivot them to realize this is not the best investment for the money I am currently holding. Real estate can't be the best investment. It shouldn't be the investment that they think it is.
I have a lot of friends that are veterans of the real estate industry, and I say right to their face, you know, you're not as smart as you think you are. You've been in a declining interest rate environment for the past, you know, 30 years. Basically, anyone could do what you did with 2% interest rates and then inflation making the price of the house go up by 20% a year, and you're borrowing money at 2%. So you're capturing the 18% spread. I'm like, that's easy. So it's been fake. It's all fabricated. I don't know eventually how it ends, but that's all fake. That's not like real proof of work. I'm smart. I bought some real estate and I made money. It's because of the low interest rates and the inflation. So the price of the house goes up. You're borrowing at a much lower rate and you make a lot of money. And that's over.
I mean, and I would even argue that was in the stock market too, right? I mean, I always think of the scene in The Wolf of Wall Street right before Matthew McConaughey starts banging his chest where he's like, it's all fugazi, like it's all, you know, an illusion. Right. Because, you know, in that time, like after 2020, when the stimmy checks were coming, you could essentially throw throw a dart at the wall and just pick three letters and then buy that ticker and it's going up. I mean, it was essentially that easy at that point in time, and it was all inflated. It was all fake, right? I mean, there was a lot of ghost zombie companies, but right. You know, nobody is like really putting in that proof of work. Maybe there's some companies out there actually making revenue and all that kind of stuff, right? There definitely is some of that, but you know, a lot of what people made, probably a majority of what people made money on, was all fake, right? They didn't really have that right. Proof of work backing it. But you kind of alluded to it a little bit there, Jeff, about how we get to the end. So I kind of see two different paths, right? So I see either we kind of continue down this US dollar path and then we slowly fizzle out the US dollar and we revert into a Bitcoin standard, or maybe some other standard with Bitcoin backing it as like, you know, the hard currency, or as a currency kind of backed by it. And then we eventually get to a Bitcoin standard because, you know, governments can't be trusted and they'll probably depeg from Bitcoin at some point in time. Or we go the bloody route where this system kind of goes and crashes and burns here pretty soon. And then, you know, everybody that doesn't have Bitcoin is in a shitty spot. So where do you guys see this going? I'll let Nick start us off here, and then I'll revert.
Man.
I'll put you on the spot here.
I'll be the bad news guy, so you can be the good news guy, Jeff. Yeah, no, I think part of my motivation is, you know, those of us who are aware of Bitcoin see the opportunity. But once you see that for yourself, you see the inverse for everybody else around you. So there's like this other motivation that's not like pure self-interest. It's also like this recognition that people don't realize the dangerous position they're putting their futures into. And so there's the sense of how do you at least make them aware to give them a chance to make that decision for themselves to hop on this new standard versus just for whatever reason, not run into the information they need to make the light go off in their head of like, One standard is going to zero and one standard is going up forever, Laura.
So I don't know how this book, what the final chapters are in this book of experimental fiat dollars we're in. But unfortunately, I think because control and power of the world, basically, not just the United States, is at stake here, I think it's going to get messy at some point, because they're not going to give that up by saying, oh yeah, you guys are right. The elite are not going to say, oh, you got you Bitcoiners, you are ahead of us. Let's transfer over. I'm not.
You're supposed to give the good news.
Well,
you're supposed to build on the bad news.
Sorry, dude.
Well, I mean, here I'll play the good guy here then, okay. I guess, because I could kind of see it going that way, right? Because I think, you know, we're in this Bitcoin bubble, so to speak, where we have seen the light, right? We've seen that this whole system's fucked and where there's no reverting back to it at this point. But we're a very small population, so I don't think like a lot of people have woken up. I think, you know, a lot of people have obviously experienced inflation and they're like, all right, it's Joe Biden's fault, basically, is what they're reverting it to. They don't really do much digging past that. They don't really understand, all right, you know, 40% of the money supply was printed in the past, you know, less than 4 years, if you kind of don't count this year, right? And then interest rate environment being super low for, you know, that decade of 2010 to about 2020, basically being at zero the entire time without the exception of 2019 attempting to raise it just a little bit. You know, I mean, people don't really even really realize that was all just kind of like fabricated wealth and a fabricated, you know, positive economy. And while these other nations were kind of scooping up. So I think, you know, throughout time, right, the U.S. is obviously getting some chinks in the armor here. But you never know what's going to like it because we have these 4 year cycles. Like we could either have a president that gets in there and kind of accelerates the, you know, the potential demise of the dollar, or we get in somebody who, I guess, slows it down a little bit. Right. I mean, like Powell.
Those are our two choices.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Let's look back at history. Let's look back at what's happened to leaders in countries that have not played by the rules, that have maybe tried to sell oil in something other than the U.S. dollar. You know, a guy named Saddam Hussein comes to mind. Let's think about Gaddafi in Libya. Let's think about all of these people that were in power. Let's think of 2014, the coup in Ukraine. It was all, those are all enemies of the U.S. and those people and those leaders are not around anymore. So I just don't think it's going to be, oh, you guys win. Sorry.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, it's like, all right, well, you know, we're kind of having like the, you know, it's pleb Nick here, right? I mean, it's the pleb movement. It's not really necessarily going to be the, you know, the big dogs trying to trade in oil, right? Obviously, when we get to that point, that's when we know we've made it, is like when you kind of like are reverting the energy markets to more of the price in Bitcoin, which, you know, obviously Bitcoin is kind of at its root, right? Energy, right? So, I mean, with the way that the mining works and everything like that. So I think we'll get there eventually. But I, like I said, I just don't think like people really understand or realize it just yet, right? I mean, I still think like people think the economy's fine, right? If you go into traditional finance, you know, if you go to New York or you hang out with the Wall Street bros, inflation's over to them. You know, I mean, we just had like a CPI print at like, what, it was like 3.6% or whatnot. So, I mean, it's like, you know, inflation's a little elevated, but it's not that bad. But if you go to Main Street, it's you, as you guys both know, it's the complete opposite. It's like, what are we doing here, boy? It's like, I mean, people haven't woken up yet, is what I'm saying. So
I also think the Wall Street bros like inflation because they own the assets. They own the cars. They own the houses. They own the fine art. They like inflation. They don't mind if their bananas doubled in price when they go to a Price Chopper. You know, they just know that their third home has tripled in value in the past 4 years. So that's kind of the problem. They don't think there's a problem because it's not a problem for them. That's why we Bitcoin, really Brandon.
Well, that's what the fiat incentivizes, right? Because if the fiat system essentially incentivizes chaos, incentivizes some sort of problem to ensue, right? I mean, like with the war in Ukraine going on right now, who wins in that? It's like the Lockheed Martins, the defense companies. You see all those stocks go up, and then who owns a lot of those? Political parties, right? And then, you know, we just had the COVID pandemic. Who owns the majority of like Pfizer stock? It's, you know, a lot of these politicians. So at the end of the day, they're the ones that own all these things, right? And they see it all shoot up. But, you know, with these crises, right, it's the rich get richer, the poor get poorer, and that wealth gap continues to increase. So, you know, I think at the end of the day, that's where Bitcoin is the true savior, right? Because this is the first time in history where we've had basically the ability of the little guy to come in and scoop up some Bitcoin and beat out, you know, a lot of these traditional finance players, right? Up until right earlier this year, traditional finance did not figure out Bitcoin. And I think, you know, as we continue to educate people, right? I mean, it's never going to be too late for somebody to necessarily get into Bitcoin. But I think those of us that got in a lot earlier, right, we're able to help set ourselves up and beat out, you know, traditional finance in the long run. I mean, maybe they'll have more fiat dollars to kind of scoop in and make up for the lost time. But at the end of the day, like, you know, we might not have been able to scoop up as much as we previously could if we didn't get in at the time we could. So, I mean, I get it. Bitcoin, you get it at the price you deserve. But I also think like this is kind of a unique revolutionary time. And it's kind of fitting that I'm talking to you boys here from Boston, where it's like, all right, you know, we're having everybody's kind of sick of seeing this wealth gap continue to increase. And then Bitcoin's that thing where we're kind of sticking our foot down and being like, all right, now's our time to kind of stick it to the man and revolt that way. So I think it's almost like, you know, a peaceful revolution until it's not, right? Are you looking for a way to help out Bitcoiners who are spreading that orange pill all over the globe? Well, I've got a way for you. You can help out Bitcoin Racing Team. You can check them out right below at bitcoinracing.co/supporters and send them some Bitcoin, send them some fiat. Help the boys out. They're crowdfunding all of this and using Bitcoin as the biggest sponsor on a mini series, which is going to have millions and millions and millions of viewers. That's right. So you can help just by giving a little donation down below at bitcoinracing.co/supporters. You can help Orange Pill thousands, maybe even millions. And they're all going to hear Bitcoin when Chris Primetime McKenzie is whipping that Mini Cooper all over the UK. So go ahead and help them out and give them some support at bitcoinracing.co/supporters. All right, now back to the show.
Exactly.
That's our motto, peaceful revolution. And I just to put a smile on your face, Brendan, I agree with you completely. And I was having a conversation yesterday with one of the Bitcoin hedge fund guys. And I said, this is the first time, this isn't unique, but this is the first time in the history that Main Street has been able to front run Wall Street. And that's basically what you're saying, that we've got to get in. We've been able to buy this asset before now the ETFs are approved. So Wall Street and TradFi is coming in. But for 14 or 15 years, the pleb was able to get into this before Wall Street. And it's never happened in the history of finance. So that is amazing. So that does give me a glimmer of hope that we can do this peacefully and transition over. But again, I don't know how the book is, the final chapter is written.
Yeah, I don't know how this plays out either, obviously, but there is something else too in terms of this quote unquote front running, which is even now, even with Wall Street getting in, like as you listen to them, there is still a sense of like, they still don't like get it, like at the deepest level. Like the idea of like, I own Bitcoin doesn't necessarily mean you're like a Bitcoin maxi, which is like the ethos of like you hodl. Like you hodl till you die. Like for some people, that's literally the belief system in their heads now. That's not the belief system of people on Wall Street, right? There's still greed on the Wall Street mindset.
Well, that will lead them to get wrecked, Nick, right? I mean, that's
what I'm saying. And if they're wrecked, who's picking that Bitcoin up?
Right.
The plus.
Yeah, and I think everybody's still kind of worried about BlackRock coming in and scooping up a lot of Bitcoin. And I agree with you here, Nick. Like I think they're going to try to set the top, essentially, right? They're going to see, you know, whatever that might be during this cycle, they're going to see, you're going to see a big sell-off at a certain point in time when, you know, they see some traditional finance indicators, they sell off, but then that'll be the pleb's chance to kind of scoop it up. So, you know, to me, I'm not super worried about BlackRock kind of coming in. I mean, of course, they're scooping in at an insane rate. Like, I mean, I think one Wednesday in March, BlackRock's ETF alone scooped up 10,000 coins, right? And I mean, we're coming up on that halving, which, you know, we're only producing 900 a day right now. And in a week and a half or so, when we're recording this, or a week and a day or something like that, we're going to see that cut into 450. So, I mean, do the math there, right? I mean, it's simple supply and demand. As much as these Wall Street bros want to, you know, kind of convolute some of these numbers and make some of the calculations more complicated than it is, everybody can kind of understand the simple X supply demand curve, right? We all learned that in economics 101. And I think at the end of the day, that's the beauty of Bitcoin, right? It brings something that we've made so much more complex for no reason at all. And then we just kind of have all rolled with it, right? Like you guys have brought up real estate, right? I mean, real estate, everything in this house is degrading, right? I mean, whether it's the appliances, the AC, the electrical, all that kind of stuff needs to be, you need to put money into the house in order to kind of maintain it. But the price of the house is going to go up probably significantly more than these things degrade. And it's not even going to be really that close, right? Because I don't know, because the underlying currency is just inflating it away, right? But it shouldn't be that, like, I guess, obvious, right? Where we're just pointing these things out, but nobody really understands that. So I think, you know, like you're saying, Nick, Wall Street still does not understand the true power of Bitcoin and the power of like a deflating currency. I think that just kind of like blows their mind. And I think at the end of the day too, humans don't understand like the actual amount of scarcity, like of 21 million, like that just being set in stone. So I think that it to me is probably one of the biggest selling points when I'm talking to people about Bitcoin is like, hey, like, you know, the government's inflating away the dollar. Everybody's experiencing inflation. But in Bitcoin, you know, your high noons that you're buying at the bar or your clam chowder you guys are gobbling up there in Boston is going down in Bitcoin relative terms, right? So, yeah, I don't know if you guys have anything to add to that. I just went on a little rant here.
No, that key point is no matter whenever I talk about it, it always falls back to the absolute scarcity, 21 million. That number is arbitrary. It's simply the fact that this is absolute. There's nothing else around you that you can go look at and say, that is absolute. There is no more than what you see. You can't create any more of this. And so that's hard to accept. Like, you know, I've always brought up as the, you know, dumbed down example of like the Mona Lisa. There's only one of them. And it's because of that it has this inflated value. But if you found out there were 10 of them painted at the same exact time by the same exact person, again, that changes supply and demand. So it's that simple. It's that simple. But we're talking about something that is just math. And
I
can
use
look
the
at
price
a
of
paper and it'll all be this always be the same truth.
I use the price of gold to my normie friends. I say gold's at $2,300 an ounce. If it went to $5,000 an ounce, you better believe they would find ways to mine more gold. Yeah. And if it's 10,000, they'd find a million more ways to mine more gold. Okay. I said, but what you have to understand about Bitcoin is it's at 100%, 21 million cap supply will never increase. And if the price goes to $10 million a coin, the supply side doesn't change. And so that's what they really have to understand, because that's the real value of Bitcoin.
100%. So boys, I've had a blast here talking to you about the freedom. I feel very patriotic after talking to you guys up in the Northeast, which is pretty surprising to me, because normally when I get a lot of Northeasterners coming down here, they're trying to escape, you know, their normie friends from being like, you know, anti-American and all that kind of stuff. But I'm jacked up from talking to you guys here. But you guys have a big event coming up in the Freedom Festival here in less than a month. We're recording this on April 12th, and you guys got it on what, May 4th, right?
Yep.
So yeah, party on May 3rd and the festival on May 4th. I'll let Nick talk a little bit about the activities and demonstrations we have.
Okay, cool. You know, as it's evolved and as we've brought more and more people in, we've realized like a lot of these activities are, you know, really all about living a, you know, healthy, health-based, wealth-based life. Like, what enriches our lives? And a lot of our activities became like these physical activities, right? You know, and it's like, how do you teach people about Bitcoin in a way that's family friendly? That, again, you know, we like, there's plenty of quotes, people always say it, but you know, health equals wealth. And I think to be free, you need both of those taken care of. So we want to pair, you know, the idea of Bitcoin with the idea of, you know, what a free life looks like, the freedom to pursue the best version of yourself, in essence. And I think that's what we want this Freedom Festival to represent. It's literally the freedom to pursue the best version of yourself. And we've been kind of deceived and deluded into pursuing not the best version of ourselves, to put it lightly. So yeah, we'll be having activities based on parkour, you know, martial arts. We'll be doing some crazy things. Like, we're gonna have cold plunges, we're gonna be doing like Wim Hof breathing sessions. You know, it's gonna be a mix of stuff, and it's just to just, you know, get people to feel more part of a community that, you know, wants to take care of each other. So Jeff, is there anything specific that we should hit on?
Well, we have Mike Schmidt coming up with his hot tub that's heated by A6 Miners. We have Texas Slim with the Cattleman's Feast, where last year, and we're doing it again this year, we buy half a cow from a local farm that was raised properly, grass-fed, non-GMO, all that stuff. We pick it up the day before the festival. We cook it the next day. He does a tremendous job. We just want to show people that Bitcoin represents freedom, and Bitcoin represents a way for you to live the best life you can. So we're putting this all this together. This isn't a conference where you sit in an auditorium and listen to speakers all day long. This is a conference where you move around. We have live music. We have Bitcoin rappers. It's just a celebration, a day of celebration, and to celebrate Bitcoin and freedom. So I invite everyone to buy a non-corner ticket or buy a full-fledged $98 ticket and come in and join the party. I guarantee this will be life-changing for everyone that attends in a positive way.
That's great stuff. So yeah, where can they go and buy a ticket? And if they're unable to make it, or they want to get more details, maybe about like some of the events, speakers, all that kind of stuff, where can they go to find some of that stuff?
Well, they could go to our website, which is massadoption.net. And then there's plenty of information about the festival. We have great speakers this year. Luke Broyles is coming in. BJ Dichter from the Freedom Convoy is coming in. Jason May, who wrote Progressive's Case of Bitcoin, is coming in. Michelle Weekly, who is a Twitter star. We have Adam O'Brien, who's Jesus is a Bitcoiner, amazing guy. I'm sort of forgetting some of the other speakers, but we have a great line. We have Anders from Toxic Happy Hour, who runs the pleb parties, is emceeing the show. We have a pleb party Friday night on the rooftop of the MGM Grand Hotel. So we have a great party Friday night and an amazing festival on Saturday. So Nick, am I leaving any details out here?
Yeah, we'll have workshops for anybody that gets the Bitcoiner ticket. So anybody that wants to get deeper into the technology side, you know, we're going to have a lot of great plebs that know the technology from basically every angle. So if there's, you know, a hole in your knowledge that you want to fill, we'll have somebody there to basically help you along the way. And like you said, we're offering a non-coiner ticket. So we see that as the best way to bring your friends and family. So even if you're a Bitcoiner and, you know, you're trying to orange pill your friends and family and it's been a struggle, you know, bring them to an event where they can actually see what this community is all about.
Amen. And I'll put all that in the show notes, and everybody should go and check out the Mass Adoption Festival here on May 3rd and May 4th. So Jeff, Nick, thank you so much for your time. And yeah, boys, I'm jacked up right now. I might go run through a wall and wave the a little bit, but thanks so much, boys.
All right.
Yeah. Thank you, Brendan.
Thanks so much for tuning in to this great episode. If you enjoyed this one and you want some more content, click on the link right here and check out my latest interview with Tom Luongo. We get into it all. If you've known Tom, he's a wild one, so stay tuned. And if you found some value in this podcast, please smash that like button, hit that subscribe button so you get notified of the next videos. All right, I'll catch you at the next one.